Welcome to Healthy Family Connections, the podcast for families wanting out-of-the-box solutions to parenting and relationship challenges, with your host, psychotherapist and author of Ending the Parenting Control Battle, Neil D. Brown.
The culture around marijuana use is in transition, and it's hard for parents to understand what's really going on and how to address it. Well, we'll talk about this in an interview with Amy Rose, who is a substance abuse expert and program director of Recovery Happens Counseling Services in today's podcast, The Truth About Youth and Marijuana Today. It's sponsored by Neil D. Brown, LCSW, and I'm your host, Neil D. Brown, and I'm here to help you get that enjoyable family that you work for every day. And if you have a question you'd like me to address on this podcast, don't be shy. We'll all benefit from your question, so come on over to my website, neildbrown.com, and enter it there today. And while you're there, download a free copy of my Parental Burnout Recovery Guide. And please remember, this is an educational podcast, not a substitute for therapy when you need it. Well, last month, I presented at a substance abuse forum and met Amy Rose, a passionate and experienced substance abuse treatment professional. Amy is the program director for Recovery Happens Counseling Services that has several treatment program centers in Central California from the East Bay all the way to and past Sacramento. I asked Amy to be with us today to talk about what's really going on with youth and marijuana use today. And even if you think you understand marijuana, you might be surprised by what you hear. Hi, Amy. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, you know, as I was just telling our listeners, you and I both presented last month at a conference, and I was so delighted to hear your presentation, not because you were giving us good news, but because you really understood what was really going on out there. But before we get into all that, I know you're the program director of Recovery Happens Counseling Services. Tell us a little about what you all do over there.
Absolutely. So we are an intensive outpatient program, and we have locations in Walnut Creek, Fair Oaks, Roseville, and Davis. And what we do is we do individual counseling and group counseling. We work with all ages. We specialize with teens and young adults in particular, and we get kids that come in that have been abusing substances, marijuana, vaping, Xanax, and we start meeting with them individually. We help the parents develop a home contract and kind of get things under control and give them an understanding of what's going on with their child and educate them on stages of substance abuse and get them involved in our parent support group. And then we work with the teen or young adult on breaking down their denial and connecting them to how substance abuse is truly showing up in all areas of their life and creating consequences.
Okay. Well, that's vital work for many kids, and we're hoping that we can talk to and get families healthy enough that kids don't get that far into into their substance abuse. So, Amy, you know, I think a lot of parents that come to see me acknowledge that there's some marijuana use going on with their kid, but they're not terribly overly concerned about it. They kind of have an attitude of, well, you know, everybody smokes a little bit now and then. I smoked when I was younger, and some parents even smoke today. And, of course, marijuana is now legal in California and many other states. And then there, of course, is medical marijuana, which is legal in many other states. And and then to even where nothing is legal, there's nothing between teenagers and access to cannabis. Fair enough? So you know, I think availability is ubiquitous, and it's on the rise. And so, Yeah, so I think it's really important for us all to have a strong understanding of what really is out there for teenagers and what are they facing today.
Right, right. Now, this is a topic that I'm really passionate about, and I'm doing a lot of talks within the different communities and school districts and doing these parent education nights, because what's scary is a lot of us just, you know, a lot of parents just aren't in the know. They're not aware of what THC, you know, the levels and what it's really at today. When I start talking about vaping, they're not aware of what that all entails, and that you can, you know, vape THC, you know, it's dabbing, and I can get into all of that, you know, and one of the biggest things I try and make parents aware of is parents, we can't help but use our own experience and how we're built and pieced together and our reactions, and we use that as a tool to measure our kids. Mm-hmm. We use that as a tool to go, well, I remember, you know, when I was in high school and I did things and it was just a phase, you know, or I remember, you know, hopefully they'll get over it, or it's just weed. I'm glad they're not doing other things. And the thing to be corrected in that is, for one, our kids are not the same as us. They're not built and wired the same way that we are, and they're not growing up in the same generation that we were growing up in. And the marijuana today that our kids have access to is nowhere near the same as it was when these parents were teenagers in high school.
Okay, so how is marijuana today different?
Yeah, for example, there's the marijuana, the plant, mm-hmm. and then there's wax, THC wax, okay? Right. Now, the plant, the potency in THC, and what people need to know is THC is what makes marijuana a drug, and THC is what makes it addicting, okay?
Okay.
Now, in the 90s, the THC potency was 3.96% in the plant.
3.96, all right.
Yes. Today, it's 30% THC in
30%.
The plant. 30%.
Okay.
Now we also have wax, which is concentrated THC, and that is 90 to 100% potency in THC.
Oh. Well, okay. Yeah. So essentially 4% to 90 to 100% THC.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So what happens to a kid when they're smoking something or vaping something that's 90 to 100% toxic?
Right. Yes. You know, it's really scary, because this is where we're seeing. So using the wax, what makes this difference is the kids have access to, and I encourage all parents, go on YouTube, go on Google, and educate yourself in looking up what, you know, pictures of wax, so you know what it looks like. Pictures of, you know, you can enter in dab pens, okay, DAB pens. That's dabbing, because there's different forms of what that is, and it's with the wax, and they have these special pens that looks like a vaping pen, mm-hmm. but it's specifically for the wax. And the kids, they scrape off a little piece of this wax,
mm-hmm.
they put it in their little dab pen, and the coils in there heat it up,
mm-hmm.
and they get intoxicated on this 90 to 100% THC, and there's not a scent, and it doesn't blow a big cloud, and it's pretty discreet, and so the kids can carry this on them and be getting high all day. Now, the difference between what I'm seeing happen to kids based on smoking the plant, and then when they start getting into doing wax or mm-hmm. through edibles, right? Mm-hmm. They're eating it in edibles.
Okay.
And the scary thing about edibles is, you know, an average edible can have anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams of THC in it.
Wow.
And it takes 45 minutes for it to absorb. And most kids are pretty impatient. And if they don't feel anything in 15 minutes, they're going to take more. So this is where we're seeing kids overdose on THC.
Mm.
They're overdosing through the edibles. They're also overdosing through the wax, smoking it in these dab pens.
Mm-hmm.
And another way they're doing it they're purchasing these rigs that attach, they're these special pieces that attach to a bong, and they use a butane gas lighter, and they melt down this wax and take one hit off this, and they're turning into zombies.
Wow.
You know, I'm seeing kids, they've got pale or gray skin, circles around their eyes, and their emotions, you know, any type of self-regulation, it's just not there. It's going from either anger or just kind of indifferent and even depressed, just kind of a meh, you know, an I don't care attitude. And their world, all the things that maybe they did have motivation or they did have things where, you know, you used to be able to look at your child and you could see the light in them. You could see the ambition and the glow. All of that starts to go away and they become very dark, you know, and it's like, where's my child? And as a parent, if you're not educated around these things, you don't know, and you're hoping that it's just hormones. You're hoping that they're going to snap out of it or they're going to change. And, you know, and then there's so much shame for parents to want to talk about when they have found these devices in their home, or if their kid did overdose and they had to go to the hospital because of overdosing on THC, it's profusely vomiting. You know, they go, some of them are going into psychosis where they're seeing things and having panic attacks. You know, we're hoping that, oh my gosh, this is just a terrible incident and it's never going to happen again. You know, and parents aren't talking about it because it's scary.
Oh, my goodness. So in single use, we could have a really profound overdose and a hospital visit with a panic attack or some other psychotic experience or episode. And then with longer term use, what you're saying is that overall functioning goes way down and emotional wellness goes, physical wellness, emotional wellness just drops like a stone.
Yes.
I wonder if our parents even know about the whole vaping and marijuana relationship. I wonder if that's new information.
Noticing that it is, because I'll go into these schools and I'll do these parent nights and I provide pictures. So vaping, they're vaping nicotine as well. They can vape all kinds of, you know, as far as they can vape nicotine. They can vape juice that doesn't have any nicotine or anything in it. And they say, oh, it's just for flavor. Or they can vape the THC wax. Mm-hmm. And even the nicotine, what's really important for parents and just people in general to understand about teenagers is teenagers are hooked on intoxication, okay? The name of the drug is an illusion. They're hooked on getting intoxicated. So perfect example for this, the kids that are vaping nicotine, you can get all kinds of different levels of nicotine, right? They even sell them as low as a level 3. Mm-hmm. Now, to kind of give you some perspective on the potency of nicotine compared to a cigarette.
Okay.
So the strongest form of a cigarette you can get is a non-filtered cigarette.
Right.
Now, what does that compare to through vape juice? That compares to 36 milligrams of nicotine, okay?
Right.
It is a non-filtered cigarette. That's what you can compare it to.
Okay.
But the kids are vaping level 50.
Level 50.
So even stronger than a non-filtered cigarette, they're vaping level 50, and there's a reason for that, because it's giving them a head change. It's making them lightheaded and dizzy and kind of out of it, and they like that because, again, forming that relationship and becoming hooked on intoxication is really just chasing to change the way that they feel. You know, and there's these special devices that you can put in the level 50 nicotine vape juice in. Some of the two most popular vaping devices right now are Juuls and Breezes. And I encourage all parents to go look these up, look what
Juuls
they look like.
Breezes.
Yeah, a Juul and a Breeze. Because the Juul, it actually looks like a little flash drive that you plug into the side of your laptop or your computer.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's really discreet. It's a little bit longer than a flash drive and skinny and long, but, and it actually does plug into your laptop to charge. So for all we know, as parents, right,
parents, I always tell when I go into these parent nights, hey, what if that's sitting at home on their desk or their dresser and you didn't even know that that's what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It looks like a flash drive, but it's not. It has, you can see the nicotine, the vape juice in there. And the reason why they use the Juul or the Breeze, the Juul in particular, because it's very discreet and it holds the level 50 nicotine. Mm. And it doesn't create a big cloud. And the kids love being able to just slide this right into their sleeve, sit in class and put their mouth down there and take a puff out of their sleeve, and that no one knows.
Mm.
Because it doesn't have a scent and it doesn't create a big cloud, right?
Wow.
You know, so again, that whole process is mm-hmm. intoxicating, being sneaky, having all these different devices. The Breeze, it's not as discreet like that, but you can look at the picture of it. And again, it doesn't create a big cloud and it holds the level 50 nicotine. But these kids become so preoccupied with all these different trinkets. Right? And who has what? And they're getting them online or they're finding the smoke shops that are selling to minors, you know, and the same thing with these dab devices. Then it's, you know, the dab devices is a discreet little vaping tool for THC wax.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming minimized. And our kids are going, well, hey, everyone's doing it. It's not a big deal. It's not bad for you. And we're seeing more and more teenagers developing full-blown addiction at a younger age.
Well, isn't that go against the common narrative that, well, you know, it's marijuana and that's not a hard drug and it's not really addicting, is it?
Right. Right. Which because that's not accurate at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's scary is because this is still fairly new, right, learning about wax in particular and the potency, what's scary to me is, you know, I hate that it's going to have to take, like, what is it going to have to take? How many deaths is it going to have to take for us to really see what it's doing to our kids? You know, most
well, you're
kids,
death.
They know.
So how,
yeah.
How is it lethal? What happens there?
Well, one of the first things that comes to my mind, as I was just about to say, was getting behind the wheel. Most kids know drinking and driving is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course kids still do it, but they'll say, yeah, no, drinking and driving is bad. And a lot of them justify doing it because they don't want to get in trouble. They've gotten themselves in a situation, they're out late, and they think, you know what, I'm sober enough now, I can just drive myself home, I don't want to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with smoking marijuana, I'm hearing from majority of kids, well, I'm a good driver when I'm smoking. It's not bad to smoke and drive.
Mm. So there's a whole lot. Yeah. So as
parents
and the community, we're way behind in the education about the downsides of smoking.
Right.
Is now not just marijuana, but high, extra high potency marijuana.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. You know, I'm telling, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, the laws right now around, you know, we're still trying to develop how high, and look how crazy this sounds, right? How high can I get on this drug and operate a vehicle?
Mm.
That's what we're looking at. And we don't know the answer to that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so police officers, they're doing the best they can. And, you know, they're doing the field test, sobriety tests as that comes up, right? If they have suspicion, they'll pull someone over and do a field sobriety test and make a decision based off of that. But right now, we don't know what is the safe amount. So let's think about that. How much of that 90 to 100% wax can I smoke and then be safe to get behind the wheel?
Hmm. Well, what about the teenager who's going to tell his parent, well, I don't really, I'm not going to smoke that wax stuff. That's crazy. I'm just going to have a couple of hits off a pipe. And everybody does that.
Right. Yeah.
But you're
saying
that even that is maybe 9 times more potent than the marijuana that their parents smoked.
Mm-hmm. And they're becoming addicted to it, and they're building up a tolerance, which is requiring them to do more and more. And that's with addiction in general. You know, not all kids, I'm not saying any kid that smokes marijuana is an addict, okay? But we have to be aware of how is our child built in peace together. There's some kids that are just, they're built in a way to where they err on the side of caution, right? They're not risk takers. Addiction, those type of temperaments, they err more on the side of risk-taking behavior. You know, a stage one in substance abuse is the experimentation stage. You know, this is a one-time occurrence. It's the first time they try a substance. They make up their mind right then and there. Either, you know, I didn't like that. That got a little bit too out of control. I'm going to step away from that. Or I love that. When can I do it again? Right? Mm-hmm. The experiment is now over. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, I always laugh and tell parents when I'm doing these presentations, like, I only need one slice of cake to know if I like it. I don't need to eat the whole sheet cake to decide, you know.
Right.
If
so
I
they
like
do one experiment, and they go, okay,
right.
This is my thing. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Stage two is misuse. This is, you know, using on random occasion, maybe special occasions, like, for example, 420 that we just had,
mm-hmm.
one of the biggest pot smoking days out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids are making all these plans and glamorizing using on this day and what that means. And so let's say a kid uses on that day. And again, once if consequences happen that day, let's say they got, you know, paranoid when they were using, which no one likes to feel that. I get, you know, the kids will talk to me about that going, oh yeah, that was scary. I got really paranoid. You know, their mind's playing tricks on them, or I felt like I got anxiety because of it. Cause there's different strands of marijuana. It depends on who's breeding the plant and, you know, and it makes people's bodies react differently.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happens, on stage two, the kid will either go, yeah, that wasn't for me. I don't like that. I don't like how it made me feel that way. Or I got caught by my parents and I lost my privileges. It's not worth it. I'm going to walk away from it. Or they go into stage three, which is substance abuse. This does not mean addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Substance abuse, though, is where they're using in spite of consequences. It doesn't matter that their grades are going down, that they're getting grounded, they're losing their phone, they're losing their car. They're still in denial, and they believe that it's everybody else. However, when you provide resources
everyone else,
to the
like
child.
My teacher isn't fair, or I'm doing this because you took my privileges away, so why should I try?
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's what, you know, denial starts to look like.
Okay.
Or, you know, mom, you're the only one that doesn't allow me to do it. All my other friends' parents let them.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's doing it. It's not that big of a deal, okay? Mm-hmm. This is what they'll hold on to bargain getting their way. But in this stage, so it's using in spite of consequences. This is an addiction, though, yet, because at this stage, this is where we get a lot of kids coming in at this stage. You know, they start to see, wow, I'm giving consequences, and they're continuing to use.
Mm-hmm.
We need to intervene, so we're going to send them to counseling, right? And when they start doing counseling and resources and tools are provided to them, if they do not struggle with addiction, they will be able to move out of this stage and get back on track. You know, it'll take time, definitely. You know, it's not fun to be a teenager and realize that you're struggling with substances and you got to work through it and step away and develop other coping skills. You know, most teenagers want it to not be a big deal. But they can move out of this stage if they don't struggle with addiction. If they, in fact, struggle with addiction, they'll be in stage four. And this is dependency. Okay? And this is where... It doesn't mean they're using every single day nonstop, but this is where even when resources are provided, they're a believer. They love it, and they're not willing to part with it whatsoever, no matter what the consequences look like. It doesn't matter that they're failing classes, they're going to have to retake classes, or even if they're getting suspended or expelled, you know, they're, again, those symptoms that I was telling you about, being pale in the face, circles around the eyes. Now, a lot of people would think that looks like opiate addiction, and it's not. This is what I'm seeing and observing from marijuana addiction.
Wow.
Yes, cannabis.
Okay.
And what people need to be aware of as well, when we think of doctors prescribing marijuana, you know, not all doctors are even prescribing it, or even allowed to, but the ones that are, we think of medical marijuana, it's high cannabinoid, low THC. You know, so again, keep that in mind. The kids want the high THC.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want low THC, high cannabinoid, because they want to get intoxicated.
You know, I was doing an intake with a college student the other day and who gotten himself into some legal trouble. And I was talking to him about his cannabis use, which he said started in junior high school or middle school. And here he is in college, and he said he has to be dabbing, otherwise he can't even feel it. So that's where he is with it. And he does it at least several times a day. That's where he was at with it, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that if you're addicted, as this young man is, and as the people we're talking about are, well, then we need much more intensive treatment. Longer-term treatment and a support group for a long-term period of time. Because once you're an addict, then you're in recovery.
Right.
And then you're in recovery.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one question I have, Amy, which is about that slide that you showed in your presentation, which is what happens to the human brain when it's been exposed to high levels of cannabis over a period of time?
Yes. No, this is so huge. So our prefrontal cortex, which is our frontal lobe that's responsible for all of our right from wrong thinking, our morals, our values, our capacity to pause and play the take through.
Yeah, executive function. Right.
Yes, impulsive, you know, decision making, being able to control that, right? That part of our brain is not done being developed till 25, 26 years old.
Okay.
Substance abuse stunts that development. Substance abuse comes in and makes it to where our kids start getting into a place of where they're becoming very reactive. They're very impulsive. And they don't know how to sit with any amount of discomfort, anything that's uncomfortable, you know. And in the adolescent brain, because it's not done being developed, they get what I refer to as tunnel vision, you know. So right now in high school, it's like I encourage you guys right now listening to even think about, you know, back when you were in high school. I mean, I don't like thinking about that. That's such a tough stage in growing up. But, you know, if you didn't make a sport that you tried out for, you experienced any type of rejection or, you know, didn't do well on a test that you really needed to do well on, in that part of your development and being that age, it's really difficult to see outside of that time in your life because your brain's not done being fully developed. So in that moment, it feels really intense and you feel like you're never going to not feel this way again. Right? And here's what we need to know about our adolescents anyways. Take away the substance abuse. Just in their environment right now, they're dealing with stress, anxiety, depression. You know, the bullying that's happening today, it doesn't stay just at school. Because of social media and technology, they never can escape it.
Exactly.
Right?
Right. So you never go home to your family and leave your peer group behind. Your peer group is always with you.
No. And so, you know, they start turning to these substances and it stunts that development and being able to naturally soothe themselves and to work through it. And they get stuck. You know, and this is where we start to see adults where, yes, they're in their 30s and 40s, but developmentally they're still a teenager.
Well, and that's you're that telling time. Me socially, emotionally, and behaviorally, but you're saying when I looked at that slide, I saw a brain that did not look like a healthy brain.
Yes, no, and so the on that slide, what I love about where that shows is so the holes and the dark spots in the brain just from marijuana use from a teenage, that was an 18-year-old that had been smoking four times a week for 3 years. And the repair on that development takes up to 2 years. So, I mean, it is repairable, but, I mean, it's scary to know how long is this person going to keep smoking. And it's stunting, you know, their serotonin levels are getting beat up on so that even when they do get away from the substance, they're feeling so low and depressed and go, well, what, why am I getting sober? If I'm getting sober, you told me I was going to feel better and I feel worse. Why would I stop?
Right.
You know, and their brain becomes dependent upon needing the substance to feel level again.
Yeah. I mean, it is triggering all those feel-good centers in the brain. And now kids have to start over again learning how to activate their feel-good centers using healthy behaviors and healthy thinking to be able to accomplish that. So it's a relearning. So sobriety doesn't solve any problem. It just allows us to get to the problems that we now can solve.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Interesting. Well, this is painful, important information that you are sharing with us. What can parents do? So here's some dilemmas that I think you've just presented. Number one is that kids could be involved and they might not know it at all. They could be saying, oh, I'm just vaping and it's better than smoking cigarettes. And besides, there's no nicotine in this vape. It's just bubblegum vape. And what are you going to tell a parent who says, well, my kid says they're not really using any substances. They're just vaping for the flavors.
Well, and this is where I think it's really important for parents to go back on their family values and morals and to, you know, you can meet your kid where they're at and let them know, like, I get that this is big in your world and this is what your friends are doing. In our home, we don't do this. You know, and while you're living with me, I'm a mother. My son is 9. God help me when he becomes a teenager. But, you know, my language with him is when you've completed college and your brain is fully developed and you're out on your own, then you get to make those decisions for yourself on what you want to introduce into your body. But our family has morals and values that we stand by where we promote sobriety. You know, you don't, I'm never going to be on board with you vaping or doing marijuana. You know, when you're the legal limit of 21, and again, you know, we can't control as parents. I wish I could. I'd say even with drinking, I'm not on board with, you know, until you're done and developed, you know, and you can have a better chance at having a developed brain to make rational decisions for yourself and knowing your balance and knowing your listening to their body. At this young age, that capacity isn't always there. There are some kids that do have that, and they're a little bit, you know, they're again, but they're wired differently, right? They're wired more on the side of air and caution, and that's just not appealing to them. That those kids are not choosing to be that way. That's just how they are. You know, just like our kids that are risk takers and getting really involved in it, that they're not choosing to struggle with substance abuse. You know, that's just, that's their reality. That's how their body's reacting to it. So as parents, what you can do is go into the mindset of, at this age right now, my child believes that they're grown up and that they know everything that they need, and they don't. They don't have that capacity, and so I'm going to make it as hard as possible on them to continue to choose the substance abuse. I'm going to go, you can go on our website at www.recoveryhappens.com, and you can purchase drug testing kits from us. And we have panels that test for nicotine and all different types of substances, and THC is on there, alcohol is on there, and you can randomly test your kids. Now, the good thing in this, too, is you can use this as a way to where your kids can use you as parents as the excuse to why, if they're in a situation and friends are saying, hey, let's smoke, they can go, you know what, my parents randomly drug test, I can't do that, and I'm not willing to lose my privileges. They can use that as their fallback. You
know? So I think you're making a really good point, which is a lot of kids will leave a little bit of evidence around because they want their parents to know, and they want to know how their parents are going to react to it. Yeah, parents don't need to freak out, I would say, but parents need to definitely respond. And one of the things, well, before I go on, you did mention that those vaping devices are so discreet now that kids might not be leaving the same evidence around. They might be using but not be able to leave the clues because the clues, the manufacturers of these products have gotten really good at making them camouflaged.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be extra alert as parents. And, yeah, I think kids want to know how their parents are going to respond. One of the articles I was just reading today was showing that parents who talk regularly with their, have deep conversations with their young teenagers, the 11 to 13-year-olds, those parents that have more conversations of more varieties and stay engaged with that particular age group profoundly impact brain neurodevelopment so that kids have greater neurointegration, make better decisions, and those better decisions are measurable and in a longitudinal study up to the age of 25. So kids are going to have a less propensity to substance abuse with parents that are engaged and stay engaged. Well,
absolutely. Or, sitting down and having family dinners together is so huge. Carving out that time, you know, and our world today, and I'll admit, even myself, right? I am very busy and, you know, just get really caught up into the day-to-day go, and working and, okay, taking my son to baseball practice, doing the games. Okay, now you're home. Getting on and making sure your homework was done. Now get in the shower and it's time for bed. And in there was no connecting.
Wow.
There wasn't that interaction of sitting down. And you can even start the conversations at age appropriateness. You know, I'll tell you guys, you know, my son, he's on the side of, he's a little risk taker. And I don't know where you live that you're seeing this, but here I live in the Roseville area, and at the Galleria Mall and the candy store in there, they're selling bubble gum cigarettes to kids. Okay. And I mean, I remember them having this on the ice cream trucks when I was a kid, and I was a risk taker myself. I'm in recovery. I celebrated 15 years in December. And as a child, I was the one drawn to those little bubblegum cigarettes off the ice cream truck, right? Well, here's my boy, 9 years old, and he's there with a friend, and the mom took these kids, and he, his, I just know him, like his little eyes just lit up and was like, ooh, you know, let's have those. And to get those back and have the experience of, you know, doing that and feeling excited and grown up and it's fun and it's risk-taking, you know. But my first reaction as a parent was to want to freak out and go, what are you thinking that I would ever allow this, right? Because as a parent, behind the freaking out, I'm scared.
Right.
I'm scared. I don't want my child to be drawn to that. I don't want him to, you know, have that progress into something else, you know. But the conversation, I got to catch myself, you know, right here I am, the program director to Recovery Happens, and I do see clients individually and work with them around addiction. Here I am freaking out and doing what I tell parents not to do, you know, because we're human.
Right.
But I got to catch myself and sit down with him and go, I bet that was exciting to get to do that, right? Putting your mouth up to that and blowing out the powder, and you thought that made you feel cool. And as soon as I met him at his level, he went, I did, Mom. Like, and it was just bubble gum. And I said, yeah. And I get to talk with him about, but do you know there's going to come a day when you get older where a kid is going to present you with a real cigarette and say, here, try this. And here's the other thing, what I wanted him to be aware of. And what if you want to do it? What if that's your truth? What if your truth is, I want to do this, even though you know it's bad, and that our family values are that we're not smokers, and that we don't use nicotine, right? How do I equip my child with tools to go, you're not bad that you want to do it? Okay, that's the hardest part about temptation.
Well, I think it's
temptation
a matter of just validating his basic nature. You're a risk taker, and you like exploring new things.
Let's channel it into something that doesn't give you consequences or create shame.
Exactly.
Right? Of I'm bad.
It's all about how, I think you're absolutely right, Amy, is that number one thing is meeting them where they're at and acknowledging their experience and validating their experience. And then the next thing is supporting them in how they can channel that in positive ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Amy, I think we've about cooked our time here.
Yeah.
I think it's really, it's been a pleasure, and it's been
absolutely.
A lot of really fabulous information. You did give your website where people can contact you, but give it to us one more time so that everyone can hear that.
Yes, it's www.recoveryhappens.com. And please, parents, you know, or anyone listening, maybe you're a spouse to a significant other or a sibling or a friend, you know, it doesn't matter. If you are relating to some of these things or this brought up some concern, please do not hesitate. You can go on our website. There's our contact information on there. You can email me. You can call me. You don't have to be alone in this stuff, and you don't have to carry shame around it. The more we can get rid of the shame and as a community be open to really talking about this and doing something about it, the better off we're going to be.
Excellent. Excellent closing words. Amy Rose, Recovery Happens Counseling Services. Thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in this week, listeners, and thanks to Amy Rose, who has us all on notice now to know that marijuana is not the non-addicting natural high of yesteryear. Now we as parents and professionals can be informed and not let our kids control the narrative. Have you read my book, Ending the Parent-Teen Control Battle? Well, whether you have or not, you can go to the publisher, New Harbinger Publications, enter the title, Ending the Parent-Teen Control Battle, click on Free Accessories, and download the chapter for teens only. It comes with a free control battle assessment. Control battles are a family affair, so we might as well include our youth in resolving it. It's free, and free is my favorite price. How about you? And please, remember, take care of yourselves. You need it. You deserve it. You're worth it. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Healthy Family Connections with Neil D. Brown. If you have a question you'd like answered, head over to neildbrown.com/submit and enter your question for Neil there. While you're there, be sure to sign up for his weekly offering. You may want to pick up a copy of Ending the Parent-Teen Control Battle at your favorite bookstore or online retailer. Join us again for the Healthy Family Connections podcast.